Hi, it's Beth here. Okay, it is episode 162, November 8th, 2020. And I was just looking and thinking about the ambassador from Belgium and the whole Jean-Luc story, you know, the bum in front of the United Nations that had the good life in Garden City, and my father's friend who was the Canadian ambassador who knew him really well. But nobody became his friend. He didn't let anyone in. He went home to his wife and his son, and he kept his mouth shut because he was making a lot of money and he didn't want any notoriety whatsoever. And so, you know, there weren't many people at his funeral. And his wife, Corinne, and the son just knew that that's how he wanted it. He didn't even want a funeral. Nobody had anything to say. Nobody knew him except for his wife and his son. So it was a big surprise to Corinne when 2 weeks later, a letter came to her home addressed to him from Kenya in Africa. She thought about it, but she opened it up. And it said, "Dearest Jean-Luc," and it was, "Thank you so much. You did make me laugh. After all these years, you came up with a pun that I understand, that I loved, and I laughed out loud the first time in 40 years. I remember everything. I remember talking to you on the bench. I remember you helping me when I first arrived. And I want to come to America and I want to see you. My daughter will come with me. And I look back on my life. And if I hadn't had you, nothing else that happened that was good would have ever happened. Please write me back and tell me when would be a good time for me to come." Corinne put down the letter. She couldn't believe it. She'd never heard about this man. She didn't know what to think. So she calls her son. She says, "Leave work, get over here." He rushes over because 3 weeks before that was a big problem. And he reads the letter. And he goes, "Mom, who is this man?" She says, "I have no idea." He said, "You're going to write him back right now." She said, "No, I'm not." He said, "Yes, you're going to write this man back right now. And you're going to ask him what the story is. I've never heard of him." She writes this very short letter. She says, "Please, dear Henry, please tell me everything you know about my husband, how you know him. I am heartbroken to tell you that he died 3 weeks ago. And I want to know why he would have loved to have received this letter. Tell me everything. I had no idea he had a friend in the world." And it was signed. And the son took it to the post office, paid an exorbitant fee to get it there immediately. 3 weeks later, a letter comes back. And it's from Africa. She calls her son at work again. She says, "I'm sorry, but please come over. I can't read it. I'm shaking. He leaves work again. Comes over. Jean-Luc Jr. comes over. He's worried about his mother. He opens up the letter. And he says, "Dearest Corinne, I was the very first ambassador from the country of Kenya. And I arrived during a tumultuous time. Our country had just become a country, very polite, generous way that the English gave our country back to us. I was invited into the UN immediately, and I arrived with not a clue, and I had not enough money to make it work. And I arrived every day to do my job in February, wearing sandals, wearing my outfit, absolutely being treated like some kind of a curiosity. The world at the time was going through a lot. We had the invasion of the Beatles, the horrible murder of Kitty Genovese, who no one could believe that no one cared when she screamed. All of those things didn't affect my life, but what did affect my life was the World's Fair and the African Pavilion. All I was getting when I was inside was, can you help me get some leopard skin from my wife? I did not travel halfway around the world for this. I couldn't get anybody to help me, see me, or understand anything. Day after day, I just sat there, silent, people looking at me like a curiosity, no one knowing what to say. Finally, I go up the stairs, and there's Jean-Luc. And he says to me, can you come over here? Can you give me a break? Can you help me? Can you think of something to say? I looked at him and I said, I am in no mood for jokes about Kenya. I can't handle what you're talking about. I don't even know what you're doing here. He said, this is my corner. This is where I live. This is what I do. I tell jokes. He said, if those are your jokes, they are not working. Jean-Luc says, okay. Okay, big shot. Tell me a joke. So, dear Henry looks at him and he says, in Kenya, we tell jokes that are stories that can help you. Jean-Luc said, okay, I'm not really a fan, but hit me with your best shot. So Henry says to him, all right, on a hike through the bush, a man, Peter Davies, on a vacation from Louisiana State University, came across a young bull in the Serengeti, a young bull elephant, standing with one leg raised in the air. The elephant seemed distressed. Peter didn't know what to do, but he approached very carefully. He got down on one knee, inspected the elephant's foot, and found a large piece of wood deeply embedded in it. As carefully and as gently as he could, Peter worked the wood out with his knife, after which the elephant gingerly put his foot down. The elephant turned to face the man and, with a rather curious look on his face, stared at him for several tense moments. Poor Peter stood frozen, thinking of nothing else but being trampled. Eventually, the elephant trumpeted loudly, turned and walked away. Peter never forgot the elephant, and he never forgot the events of the day. 20 years later, Peter Davies was walking through the Chicago Zoo with his teenage son. As they approached the elephant enclosure, one of the creatures turned and walked over to near where Peter and his son Cameron were standing. The large bull elephant stared directly into Peter's eyes, lifted its front foot off the ground, then put it down. The elephant did this several times, then trumpeted loudly. All were staring at Peter. Remembering the encounter of 20 years before, Peter could not help wondering if this was the same elephant. Peter summoned up his courage, climbed over the railing, and made his way into the enclosure. He walked right up to the elephant and stared back in wonder. The elephant trumpeted again, wrapped its trunk around one of Peter's legs and slammed him into the railing, killing him instantly. Jean-Luc looks at Henry, and Henry looks back at him and he says, probably it wasn't the same elephant. Jean-Luc is like, what is that joke supposed to mean? Henry said, when I walk in that building, no one can tell the difference between the elephants. I'm making no impact. Jean-Luc says, well, let me think about it. Come back. Come back tomorrow. Come back. Jean-Luc, freezing in his sandals. They had spent 10 extra minutes outside in the freezing rain talking to Jean-Luc, runs into the building. The next day, Jean-Luc comes up to him with a raincoat, Burberry raincoat. And Henry says, what is this? And he said, Jean-Luc said, you know what? You seem like a pretty cold elephant. Well, that started their friendship. That's how it began. Every Thursday they had lunch because Corinne, you made chopped liver and baguettes that I lived on. I didn't have enough money for food. Kenya gave me every dime they had, but it wasn't enough to keep me alive. And that coat, Jean-Luc's extra coat, that you got at some thrift shop for nothing, saved my life that winter. We would go to a park every Thursday, and we would talk. And we had two entirely different ways of viewing the world. Jean-Luc looked at every man when they came up the stairs, and he graded them on what car they came out of, what they were wearing, and who they were talking to. Henry looked at every man, their physical being, the way they walked. If there was a leap in their step, like an animal, he could read their body language. Jean-Luc could read the level of their wealth. Together, they meshed their two ways of looking at things, and it helped Henry completely when he walked into the building. He stopped looking at pride, and he started looking at money because he was in New York. If he'd been in Africa, it would have been different. And Jean-Luc stopped looking at money and started looking, okay, this is a wealthy man, but is he sad today? Is he broken today? Is he happy today? Let me tell him a joke for his mood. And they both were wildly successful, having meshed their abilities together. And this went on for an entire year. They talked. And Henry could not get to the UN easily because he couldn't afford a cab. So Jean-Luc, knowing the French ambassador like he did, got the French ambassador to pick him up in a chauffeur limousine. Henry said, how did you get this to happen? He said, the way I got it to happen is that the English would have never done it. And the French ambassador was furious that the English were acting like they've always, with every country they've ever owned, have given it over so peacefully. So anything to hurt the French was anything that this ambassador would do. And he invited Henry to parties. And he made a difference. Henry was trying to show everyone at the UN that every country in Africa was different from every other country. And he told Jean-Luc, every week Jean-Luc would try to tell him a joke. And Henry would say, look, I love puns. And those weren't Jean-Luc's, that wasn't his forte. Henry said, my funny bone is minuscule. I never laugh. I haven't laughed since I was 5 years old. I don't think anything's funny. I think everything's serious. And Jean-Luc said, this is no way for you to live. So he kept trying to pun after pun after pun after pun. Never worked. Nothing ever got this man. So finally, Henry was going back to Kenya, back to his life, back to his tribe, which he loved, back to his family, back to his daughter and his wife. And he said, Jean-Luc, I think we should write a letter to each other every year on our birthdays. I don't want to lose my attachment to you. And Jean-Luc said, you know, I'm terrible at writing letters. I can hardly write. And I'm going to let you down. He said, but I will write you a letter if I ever come up with a pun that is so funny that I'll make you laugh. And what could Henry do? Nothing. So, and Henry was his American, British, English name. And Jean-Luc was the only one that he let him call Henry. And his name was actually Dear Henry, because his mother heard some children playing at the hotel that she was cleaning. There's a hole in the bucket. Dear Liza, there's a hole in the bucket. The hole, we'll fix it, Dear Henry. And she had tried for 15 years to have a baby. And she thought Henry, Dear Henry, was a name, a beautiful name, Dear Henry. And she believed that that night she became pregnant because she could see herself having that baby. The only one that Henry ever allowed to call him by his American name, English name, was Jean-Luc. So he thought that they were close. But Jean-Luc kind of cut the cord right there. And it broke Henry's heart. So when Henry received the letter 20 years later with a pun that he knew finally would make his old buddy finally laugh, Henry cried when he received the letter. He was so excited. And he told him all about his child and all about retiring and all about Corinne and how wonderful their times are, that he gets to be with her and they garden in the backyard now and everything is beautiful. And then he said, but here's why I'm writing this letter. I finally have hit upon it. I know you told me that you only like puns that are like a string of pearls with two or three or four puns in the joke. I couldn't find one. I couldn't make one up, but I finally have it. Henry sat down. He was ready for this. Well, here's how it goes. And this is just for Henry, not for you or me, but this is what Henry wanted. It goes like this. A research group was engaged in a study of longevity in mammals and had recently focused their attention on a particular species of porpoise, which they studied from their floating laboratory off the coast of the Baja, Mexico. They came to believe that if fed just the right combination of nutrients, this particular porpoise could, in theory, live forever. To put this to the test, they studied the world's flora and fauna to see if any naturally occurring organism would fit the bill. They finally narrowed the selection down to an unusual species of minor bird, and they sent a team of researchers off to gather a specimen. It turns out that the minor bird in question was quite rare, living only in a single tree in Kenya. The research team finally arrived at the tree to capture the bird, only to find that the tree was surrounded by a pride of very hungry lions, precluding any reasonable attempt to approach and climb the tree. A suggestion was made that the lions might be manageable if they could be fed. And so a couple of fat Cape buffalo were captured and offered to the lions. The hungry lions devoured the hapless beasts and lay down upon the grass to sleep and digest their meal. One of the researchers then gingerly tiptoed past the lions, climbed the tree, and had little difficulty capturing one of the minor birds. He climbed back down the tree, walked past the lions to rejoin the group when a game warden appeared and arrested him for what? For what else? For transporting minas across sedate lions for immortal porpoises. I repeat, for transporting minas across sedate lions for immortal porpoises. Henry laughed his head off. And he closed the letter, saying, Corinne, your husband was my one and my only friend. and I wouldn't have made it through New York if it wasn't for him. Please accept my condolences on losing a great man. Love, dear Henry. P.S. Corinne, may I ask you when your birthday is? So that was John Luke, and that's what happened. And that was his one friend. And he and Corinne wrote letters on their birthdays till Corinne died. So that's my story. And it's true. And I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.